Hey Siri, do I have any appointments in my calendar today?
Yes, you have an appointment for today.
Can you read it out to me?
At 2 p.m., podcast recording with Pratik Sibyl.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Hi everyone, this is Internet Governance Explained. My name is Vanessa and I'm here with Halil.
Hey everyone.
We are students at the Free University of Berlin, and today we'll talk about the governance of artificial intelligence, and we're going to dive into questions regarding what AI even is, what is ethical AI, and some of the concerns and opportunities that have been circling around it. And to learn more about this topic, we have invited the expert, Pratik Sibyl. Hi Pratik, how are you today?
Hi Vanessa, hi Halil. Very well, and thanks for having me here. It's really great to be in this conversation. It's a topic that I'm quite invested in, both personally and professionally. So happy to exchange and also learn more about what you guys are thinking.
Thank you. I think that I can speak for both of us when I say that we are very excited to have you with us today. So thank you for your time. Before we begin with the discussion, can you tell us a bit about yourself, who you are and what you do?
Well, yes. So I'm Pratik. I consider myself as a technology policy researcher, whereas my professional affiliation is with UNESCO, where I'm a program specialist working on issues related to digital innovation and transformation within the communication and information sector based out of Paris. Now, I've been working on issues related to internet governance, but more towards AI and how we can think about what are the models that we can borrow from internet governance and apply to AI governance, or can we even do that? Capacity building is an important issue that has been occupying most of my time over the past year. We're working with judges, lawyers, judicial operators to strengthen their capacities on AI. Not only on AI, but its legal implications and so on.
Thank you, Pratik. This sounds amazing. I can already tell that we invited the right person for the topic of this discussion, and now I'm really excited to talk to you about it. So, first of all, artificial intelligence. When we talk about AI, we talk about smart machines and systems capable of performing tasks which typically require human intelligence, such as visual perception, speech recognition, and even decision-making, right? We already have smart cars, for example, which can drive themselves. So these machines learn from vast amounts of data and make predictions of a specified outcome. And today, the importance of the role of artificial intelligence in our lives is increasing. AI systems are implemented when making value-laden decisions for society, to make medical diagnosis, for example, or to personalize content for users even. So there's already a direct impact of artificial intelligence on people's lives. So my first question for you would be, what are some potential benefits to artificial intelligence?
I think when we are talking today about AI, I would probably step back before I go into the benefits of AI and talk about why is it so complicated? Why are so many people talking about this issue? We as students of governance come from the angle of, okay, so there is a problem and we need to address it. But a challenge when we talk about technology governance is summed up by something called the Collingridge dilemma. So Collingridge dilemma, it was a science and technology scholar in the 1980s in the US, David Collingridge, who came up with this. And he said that when you are talking about technology and its governance or regulation, the problem is that until what you're trying to regulate is the impact of the technology on society. You're not regulating the technology for its own sake. What you're regulating is impact on society. While when the technology is new, you don't really know its impact on society because you don't see it, you don't have the consequences. Take the example of Facebook and so on and social media algorithms. I think until about 2015, when it really became big, when we started seeing impact on democracy with the whole Cambridge Analytica and things happening in the UK with the US election and so on, we started to know, oh, this is really muddling our systems up. So that's one. We don't know the impact at the intersection of technology and society, so we find it we find ourselves under ignorance when we have to decide. And at the same time, by the time you start seeing what is the impact of the technology, it becomes quite deeply entrenched. It's all over. It's already all over in my daily life, in my phone, on my Netflix account, on my it's just everywhere. So then it becomes a bit more difficult to regulate its impact because it's so deeply entrenched. And then comes AI and, you know, perhaps venturing into now your question about what are the benefits of AI. I think undoubtedly there are just actually a couple of days ago, I was visiting a friend who works in a health robot, in the health robotic sector. And they were showing to me a project where we really see how for some of the mundane tasks, I'm not going to go into too much detail of the project because it's a startup which is still developing it. Mundane tasks are being automated to free up kind of valuable time of medical staff to and then focusing more on higher order tasks which require more skill, precision, while the things which can be kind of automated are being done by machines. So it's an interesting space where you will free up valuable human resource for more tasks which humans can do, and the robot can take on the more kind of repetitive kind of tasks. But that's just one way. But this does not mean that AI is only doing that, because AI is also doing very specialized tasks which are not mundane and not repetitive, and is doing them better than humans. And there are just so many benefits of this technology, and sometimes we don't account for that when we talk about, say, agriculture and providing input to farmers at the right time, at the right moment, for basically different farming practices. In healthcare, as I mentioned, in drug delivery, we know this example from about AlphaFold on how AI was used, and it really accelerated the process of drug delivery, because which would have taken years on previously. So I think we can just go on and on about different positive cases, and of course also the negative examples about AI. And we really need to, I think we're reaching a point where we're thinking about the risks. We look at the risks and then we say, okay, proportionally, what can we do to address this risk in different domains?
This all sounds super interesting. And I think that you brought into light a few very interesting perspectives, and the fact that there are so many benefits coming with artificial intelligence, which make people's life easier, even everyday life, using the internet, using our devices, using our smartphones. However, what you also mentioned is very important, that artificial intelligence is being so talked about today because it already introduces some unique problems for society as well, because the data which AI systems use is sometimes flawed and erroneous, which can even lead to bias, which has already been empirically proven actually. So you started talking about the risks to artificial intelligence. Could you mention a few more risks, for example, to artificial intelligence?
So I think I would step back a bit. I would say when we talk about risk, let's talk about technology in general. Because my interest is not only AI. My interest is broadly to think about technology. Because today we are talking about AI. Tomorrow we may be talking about something else. But what we need to think is there are, of course, specificities. But we need to anchor it in broader understanding of how we're thinking about technology. And this is one area where, for instance, ethics informs us. So when we talk about risk, let's take one step back and talk about ethics first. What is ethics? Ethics is really telling us what to do, what not to do, and basically guiding our actions. Now, when we talk about technology, anything around us, for instance, if you take a speed breaker, right? A speed breaker, while you're moving, it forces you to slow down. So it is a technology which has a script laden in it. It's something without actually saying, without a human being present, it is making you act and in a particular way. It is guiding our action. So in a very micro sense, there is all this technology around us which is guiding our actions. So in that sense, we have not only embedded force, like it's not only a machine which is a hammer and which will hit something with force, but we are embedding technology with values also and ethics also. So I think that is important to understand before we start thinking about risks and who needs to address those risks and how those risks need to be addressed. To give you another example, when we are talking about social media, our social media feeds, whether on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, everything is curated as per an algorithm. Now, this is really also guiding our actions, whether I feel happy or sad, or when I look at a cat video or a dog video, or if I'm seeing something which is some form of violence, it can aggravate my mood. So technology all around us is embedded with ethics. And if technology and artifacts have values, then we need to question the designers who are making these, the engineers, the scientists who are making this technology are also the ones who are embedding. They are not only designers, but they are also ethicists. So I think we need to start thinking of creators, designers, but also people who are running these businesses as responsible in developing technology. So having said that, now the risks in very tangible terms, there are so many risks around us. Let's focus on, we've been talking about social media a bit. There's risk towards polarization. When we have social media platforms, I think Vanessa researches on this topic. We see there is extensive polarization, which leads to filter bubbles, echo chambers, which is kind of decoupling society. The risk here is towards democracy, towards human rights, towards denial of history, of facts, and all the things that we hear about every day. So there's that risk. Then there's, of course, very tangible risk that of products being biased. You mentioned, Halil, about data-driven biases. But there are also programmer-driven biases. Data can have, there are different entry points to data-driven biases, whether it's lack of representation, certain communities were not captured in data. I was engaging with a researcher in Kenya, and they mentioned that a lot of the data in the digital ID project in Kenya flows from historical data on family surveys and so on. And now that data didn't record women or something of that sort. So in some cases, women were missing from this data. And now this data is going to be used for policy making and so on. So sometimes data misses. There are big data gaps, or it is not representative. Then, of course, there are programmer-driven biases. How do you select what feature an algorithm should pick and use for its decision-making? That is an individual decision. This is where this role of a designer as an ethicist also comes in, because they need to think about the choices that they are making, and we need to put in systems of accountability in place so that those choices are made considering the potential impact of these technologies towards bias and discrimination.
No, thank you so much. I think you touched upon a lot of the concerns and ideas that come to at least my mind, but I'm sure the minds of our viewers when we're entering the conversation about artificial intelligence, the fact that technology in and of itself seems to always be a reflection of the kind of biases and aspects of representation or access to power that our societies are currently like still undergoing. And particularly when it comes to AI, I think most people still struggle to fully understand the life cycle of AI, how it is produced, by whom it is produced, and perhaps that's a way smaller group that any of us can conceive, given the impact that it has in our everyday lives and the kind of nudges that it can provide. So you talked about ethics, you talked about principles, and this is something that is now a key focal point when it comes to artificial intelligence, this idea of ethical AI. So could you give a bit more of an explanation about what those principles sound like, or how it could crystallize itself into practice, into transparency or responsibility, or the building process itself?
Yeah, for sure. So when we talk about ethics, I've talked about how it is embedded, how values are embedded in technology. Now is the point where we have to decide what are the values that we want to embed in technology. And this is what most ethical guidelines are trying to do. They are trying to define that when we develop this technology, we need to think about transparency, explainability, responsibility, non-discrimination, and so on. And there are so many values which have been outlined around the world, but I think essentially it crystallizes to around 5 or 6. And transparency is, of course, one of those. So we have this general idea of transparency, but it has very specific meanings across different fields of study. And generally, it is considered to be a good thing. But we should also question, with the changing uses, whether this assumption stands well. You know, this idea of sunlight is the best disinfectant, transparency is the best policy, kind of a thing. Things that I learned when I was in school, and I still believe in those. But we need to also kind of question some of those received wisdom. Now, when we talk about AI and transparency, I would say there are several interfaces. One is the data interface that we talked about. So when we are talking about data, we need to think about, one, where is that data coming from? What is the source? Is it representative enough? Is it what kind of decisions are going to be made based on that data? And there are some research, there is good amount of research around this topic. Particularly, there is this quite widely cited and used paper on data sheets for data sets, which really goes into how to operationalize these ethical values and principles that we've talked about into actual practices of data scientists or designers. So to address your question about how are we tangibly addressing, we are providing, first defining these principles broadly as a society and world, and then creating tools in the form of guidelines and so on. Then you move to the other interface, which is the transparency problem when you talk about the algorithm itself. What you are defining is, oh, I want this as an output, or this is the objective of this algorithm. So you need to be clear of what is that objective. Is the objective ethically aligned with what we want or not? I think there is need for transparency in that respect. And there's this really nice book by Stuart Russell called Human Compatible, which discusses and develops this thought quite much in detail, and would really suggest that as well. Then there's this aspect about the black box, which is also staying with the algorithm interface. There are certain ways in which we don't really know what is the output of the algorithm going to be, because the way the decisions are taken. And that is also another area where we need transparency as to what are the correlations the algorithm is picking up from the data and coming up with results. And then there's a third layer, which is the governance layer, or broadly we can say the business model, but I wouldn't just limit it to businesses, because governments are also using algorithms. So which is, how is this system then being used? What is the context? Is it being used in healthcare? Is it being used on social media? And there is a need for transparency. For instance, when we talk about the series called Internet Governance. So when we talk about Internet Governance, there is this concern about content being taken down from social media platforms. A lot of this is automated, that social media content which is considered inappropriate on a platform is flagged, then it's taken down. And sometimes there's no transparency about the content. And there have been cases where they were journalists or activists working on documenting war crimes and uploading this data on YouTube. And YouTube took that data down. But this data, these videos, they would have been useful in prosecuting war crimes. So there's this kind of clash with freedom of expression and on the platform itself. And AI is kind of mediating this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I'm particularly curious with this aspect of explainability of AI and this black box phenomenon that you mentioned, where the output is not necessarily pre-known or predefined or predetermined. Is this something that just requires more research, more understanding, and it will take a bit of time until we get there? Or when it comes to operation and processes, it's also something that could be sped up along the way?
To me, transparency alone does not help because it is an important foundation towards more accountability, I would say. But alone, transparency is not sufficient. If we have seen models of consent, notice and consent on internet, but that's meaningless. So transparency without tools to, one, make it understandable to people in language that they understand, and then providing mechanisms and real choice to people is not very useful. So I think we should also, when we talk about AI or internet governance, generally think about how is it tangibly improving people's life? Is this just transparency for the name of it, or it's really leading to improving outcomes?
Thank you for this input. I think that you just brought something very important into light, and namely the aspect whether we should distinguish between transparency and comprehensiveness when we talk about artificial intelligence tools. But in itself, this raises another question. How do we account for this transparency, and who should be responsible to govern it? There are different regulatory frameworks for governance of AI from around the world. For instance, Singapore has a government approach which delivers a framework to private sector organizations to address key ethical and governance issues when developing and deploying AI solutions. The European Union has introduced the so-called General Data Protection Regulation, the GDPR, for example, which comes in the form of a law for privacy and security related to European citizens' data. And it is actually argued that the GDPR is one of the strongest approaches to AI governance, but nevertheless, it still lacks algorithmic transparency to tackle discrimination. And on the other hand, companies and organizations which develop and deploy artificial intelligence should ensure that they have an AI governance plan monitored by a team of experts, and most importantly, a plan which is reviewed periodically. Because we should not forget that the world is changing rapidly today, and that certain predictions made by AI now might not be relevant in 5 years. So my question to you is, actually it's more than one question, how can we make sure that there is transparency and ethical standards? Who should be in charge of AI regulation? And is a multi-stakeholder model, in this case, adequate?
So there's one aspect is standards, and these standards organizations are not necessarily centralized. They are very open, they are very multi-stakeholder, very deliberative. So that's one model. Then, of course, you have guidelines and advisories, and then there's this idea about self-regulation. So there's this kind of soft law approaches. Then you have really the hard law approach, where you say, if this is happening, then you have to do this. And I believe a combination of all is needed. So I believe that we are at a point where we definitely need regulation. So when we talk about governance of AI, we need to also think in terms of what are the frameworks that we are using. The existing frameworks that we are talking about governance online, are they still relevant when we, for instance, this privacy aspect that I mentioned, or we need to think more and evolve these discussions. And this is where I think regulation can push and nudge people. But as I mentioned in the beginning, regulation is also tricky because we sometimes don't know the impact of technology on society. But in spaces where we do know, I think there is need for developing mechanisms for asking people to publish information, then also providing mechanisms for redress, doing audits, and so on. And I think there were more questions around who should do it. So I think the who part is really dependent on what stage of technology we are talking about. Governments have a big role to play, but businesses have big responsibility as well. And people who are designers have responsibility as well. People who are selling these products and integrating these products have responsibility. Another thing would be governments who are using these products have responsibility on how they're using it. So at different stages, different people are involved. And I think a mechanism for regulation or governance should be informed by everyone, because everyone comes with a different perspective. And this is why multi-stakeholder approaches are key to governance of AI.
Absolutely. And I think you provided a very good overview of the kind of different actors and main players when it comes to this. And of course, I think most of us have this concern from a user perspective. What is this doing to me, how I'm using it? How does it influence my relationship with technology? And can I even understand what's happening? And I find it quite interesting as well, cities that are currently trying to embed what they also call to be ethical AI. And I was looking into the case of Barcelona, who's at the very beginning stages of doing this, and currently doing testing for monitoring beach occupancy level and handling citizen complaints and having algorithmic support for a lot of different social services. And I believe they're doing this in tandem with Amsterdam and New York City as a part of a coalition, cities coalition for digital rights. And a lot of the principles that are guiding this coalition are also similar to the ones that you mentioned earlier on, as far as having a big focus on equal and universal access to the internet and making sure that they increase the computer literacy of their citizens, and that the citizens themselves should have access to any of the algorithms that the city council is using so that they can have this opportunity to challenge it and really see how the city is evolving with this data and this technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's another important aspect where state capacity plays a huge role as well. Because not only do we have to define these frameworks, but then there's this whole dimension of kind of public governance and management and how bureaucracies work and how they need to also think of their relation when they use this technology. How does it change the citizen-government equation? So that intersection becomes interesting as well when cities start using this technology. And they need to reflect not only on the technology part, whether they are using, for instance, a facial recognition system or a voice chat system, which is talking and giving advice to tourists or so on, but there are also concerns about the relation between city and the people. What is the overall objective of the government in using these technologies? Is it inclusive? Are people being left behind because they don't have access, as you mentioned, Vanessa, to technology or literacy or knowledge of it? So I think those aspects then also come in this realm of public management and governance. And that's also interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think these kind of changes and potentials are, it's quite exciting. But on the other hand, I can also understand some people who have concerns and maybe view this as the beginning to the dystopian novels that we might have read when we were younger. But the fact that these principles are embedded in these beginning phases and that they seem, at my glance at least, to be quite dedicated to having a lot of tracking and research about how this is impacting the cities that are involved in this. It's a bit of a pragmatic note to the positive potential that AI inclusion into cities could have.
We should though also be aware of kind of ethics washing, which happens. Like people may set up these ethics boards and say the city may say we are implementing these principles, but in actual practice maybe it's not happening. Are they really holding themselves accountable? Are there systems in place? Are they funding that process of accountability to be held accountable, and so on?
I think that this critical point of view is extremely important, and I think that the examples that you gave us earlier and the example with these cities that Vanessa just explained, I think it shows how beneficial artificial intelligence can be and how it can actually make life easier. But I also like the critical point of view that you mentioned several times, that there need to be some ethical principles when we talk about artificial intelligence, because it does have direct consequences for society and for us as individuals and users. So before we end the discussion, I wanted to ask you if you have any final remark, so to speak, to summarize this talk for the audience.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It was wonderful to chat with both you and Vanessa. I would just say that we all need to be part of the conversation. We as citizens and people who are not from a technology background should not feel this is not going to affect us or we don't understand. But I think we need to create systems where this technology and its impact is more accessible. I think when we say it should be like no decision about us without us, and for us to be taking a decision, I think it is important that we are informed, aware, and empowered to contribute to that decision making. And this is where multi-stakeholder practices, not only as a buzzword to have a round table with 10 people who are from different places or different backgrounds and so on, but to actually implement it throughout the life cycle and actually be transparent and inclusive and provide people the support to be participating in these conversations is super important.
Thank you so much for this great final remark. I think this really summarized the point and the goal of this podcast. And I think that I can say for both of us with Vanessa, but I'm sure that our audience thought that this was really interesting as well. So thank you for the discussion, Pratik.
Thanks, Salil. Thanks, Vanessa. It was lovely to have you.
Thank you.
And also thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We hope that you enjoyed our talk. We are Halil and Vanessa, and this was Internet Governance Explained. You can find us on every major podcast platform.